a slap it, Joe, yeah. Slap it, Joe, slap, a slap it, Joe, come on. Slap it, Joe, slap, a slap.
Hey, welcome back to Extra Features Interviews. Today we have a fantastic guest who wants to be called Mrs. Jacobson. So, hello. Miss, I apologize. I'm already in trouble. We haven't even started yet. Her new film, Lunch Ladies, is like tearing up a storm on the circuit. I'm reading positive interviews everywhere, and I had to stop reading them because it was giving me too much information on my questions.
Awesome.
Even though I do want to know what was on your dress in the photo I saw the other day. You were wearing a green dress and like
a... I'm all about promoting my film through these latex dresses that I have. So I have this lady, Vital Vein Fashion, and she made this amazing latex dress that has just the inside of your guts all over it.
So it is what I thought it was. I'm good.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's a lunch ladies, man. Wrong and horrible.
So where did this idea form from? Did you have some bad experience in high school?
No. Well, okay, so... It's actually an ode to, because my dad was a high school teacher, and it's an ode to all the people, teachers and lunch ladies, that have to make do with nothing and are always getting, like, blamed for shit that they can't do. So it is a positive thing for these people that are underdogs. And the idea came because the woman who plays the lead, Donna Peroni, I was in a play with many years ago when I thought I was an actress, and we became really good friends, and she told me that she would always go on these auditions, and her and this other woman were a similar type, and the other woman would either get the role or she would get the role, and it really sucked because they liked each other, but they were always in competition. So she said, oh, I just wish somebody would make a movie about lunch ladies. Then her and I could both get cast. So that started me thinking, and the woman that she was up against didn't get cast in this, but anyway, that started me thinking, and I Sweeney Todd's one of my very favorite plays ever, and so it just kind of was like, what if I just like do this spoof on Sweeney Todd? And then also, I was like, you know, a lot of people do spoofs on Sweeney Todd, so I might as well wink at it, make it about these obsessed women that are obsessed with Johnny Depp, and then get the idea to do what they do because he was in Sweeney Todd. So it's kind of came about like in a really weird way, but... And it is a really weird idea. Murdering lunch things in love with Johnny Depp.
Okay, first question. The Johnny Depp obsession. You have Johnny Depp poster. You have a Johnny Depp pin. You have Johnny Depp shirt. You have Johnny Depp candles.
Absolutely.
Am I missing something?
No, there's probably even more Johnny Depp stuff in there. There was a Johnny Depp shrine. They have the t-shirts. They have pins on their lapels. They have, in the car, they have like a... Just a Johnny Depp bumper sticker. I mean, they're obsessed with Johnny Depp. Yeah.
Now, is that your obsession or just is something you decided to go with?
No, that's the lunch lady's obsession because it's a story. I mean, it's a horror, but it's really – I don't really think it's a horror. I think it's a comedy because it's really a story about people going for their dreams. And, you know, it's these two women in this little tiny town that have nothing to live for because their job sucks, their life sucks. Nobody appreciates them, but they – watch Johnny Depp every day, and they believe that he's going to make them their personal chefs, and they just, you know, it's a fan-obsessed, crazy belief, and they just go for it 100%.
So how did they enter the Johnny Depp contest?
How did they enter? In the feature, it's a little different. In this particular one, it's like a Cook for Kids charity event.
Okay.
They sent in their Cheesy Burger Bites recipe, and they won.
I know. I thought that was great. I really liked it.
Cheesy Burger Bites recipe.
You went into this with very high production values, I noticed. I thought it looked very clear. It did not look like an indie in any way. It looked like a definitely like a studio picture, I thought, at times.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm a writer, so like this is my first film, and I didn't really know much about making a film, but I was like, I'm going to surround myself with the best people I know. And I found an incredible director, J.M. Logan, and he does a lot of post-production, and he knew what to do with that. I found an incredible cinematographer, Chris Eckstein, who had their company had optioned one of my scripts. So I knew him, and he knew what he was doing. So the stuff that I didn't know to do, I surrounded myself with the best that I thought was the best, and I just was lucky to have like so many amazing people on board. And I knew about the writing, I knew about the acting, and I knew really good people to bring on. And then they all brought their gifts to it. So
So where did you get the musician then? The music is great. It suits every scene perfectly.
Well, I was so scared about the music. I meditated on it for months because I was like, God, we got to get somebody good. And Josh, the director, has a friend that he's worked on stuff before named Federico Gisid, who's an Oscar nominated. I think he actually won an Oscar for music. He's a composer and he loved the film. And he said, you know, I'm too busy to do it right now, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to come on board. I'm going to produce the music for you. I'm going to find you somebody who can do this music. And he found this young guy, 22-year-old kid from Spain named Anthony M. March. And Josh has composed scores for music also. And he worked some with, you know, him and telling him exactly what he wanted. And he just did the most incredible freaking job ever. And he did it in 2 weeks. And then I'll tell you a crazy story. And I don't know how it was pulled off, but then they got, this is crazy, they got a 60-piece orchestra in Budapest to record it. Oh. So that's real orchestra.
Because it sounds amazing. I'm like, this sounds like an actual feature soundtrack. I was so impressed with the sound coming in. I'm like, it's well edited.
Yeah, Amelia did. We had a wonderful editor, Amelia Allward, and she's won one award, and she's been nominated for another. She works on Good Behavior, and it was not an easy film to cut. And then, you know, and then I also got Fire the Animal, this great rock and roll band that gave me the song for the end. That I found through a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend, you know, so.
Oh, don't worry. I will want to talk about the end, but we'll get there.
About Fire the Animal?
Oh. Yes. Where did you find the car that the lunch ladies drive? Maybe you don't know where they – I love that car.
Well, I had – in the script, it's like a really nasty-looking Buick, like a really dumpy-looking Buick, but we couldn't find one. But Eric Reagan, who's a line producer, he just started calling around and found this car, and we were like, just make it as – and this thing was so awful looking. Like, the seats were just trashed. And then the set designers, Alicia and Ray Ho, their husband-wife team, just – they even made it more jacked. They just filled it with so much shit. It just looks just jacked, which is how we wanted it to look.
I loved how the lunch ladies are portrayed right at the beginning of the film. This looks like their car to me. Like, I had no problems believing they would drive around in this car. Not a problem at all.
It's too bad you couldn't see the back seat because the back seat was filled with, like, you know, McDonald's wrappers, a big can of Crisco, some clowns, just crazy shit.
It would have been perfect. Absolutely perfect. Now, you named the school Melvin High. Is there a reason for that? Or is that just a name that occurred to you?
Yeah, that was just a name. I mean, it sounds like a very Midwestern school. Like, I mean, we put it in California because we had to film in California, but if I was to do the feature, it really takes place in, you know, the snow, like in Melvin, Ohio, at Melvin High. And, you know, a lot of those schools in the Midwest where I'm from, they have very just standard names. So that's where that came from. Yeah.
Yes, I have to ask these questions. The food, what did you guys make food out of? It's disgusting. Like, I would not eat that. I'm like, I'll bring my lunch. I'm good.
Well, Matt Folletta, who's the SFX guy, he did some of the food, like the green food and stuff like that. He knew how to make it. That didn't smell. But then we had a woman who came on board, Susan Boyle, who did just an amazing job making the pies. And there were some things that we wanted real. So she made this chocolate pudding thing that looks like crap, and then she made these, and I, you know, these green beans, and we're like, make sure they're super overdone, like really, really, you know, like how they're just, so they're kind of like almost gray. And then the meat she got from Costco and like filled it with like raviolis, and it just looked horrible, and that smelled really, really bad. That I had to Febreze the school and mop the school because it smelled so bad.
So, okay, we can go to the pies. That actually look like chicken pot pies to me.
That's, or maybe, well, that's what white pie? Meat is. It's probably what people meat is.
I couldn't figure out what that
looks,
was.
It looks and tastes like chicken, yeah.
But I did really thought that you put a lot of thought into the smell scene. And everybody smelling. I thought that was fabulous.
Thank you.
The uniforms were amazing. I thought that was the perfect lunch. It reminded me so much of my high school. Laying those lunch ladies. I'm like, I remember these women. Nobody talked to them.
Yeah, our just fantastic because he came up with the idea of putting the flare, the pins on, because they have like Johnny Depp loving pins all over their thing. And then I was going to put them both. I was like, let's put them both in hairnets. And he's like, no, we're going to put one in a hairnet and one in this like do-rag, white do-rag. And it just looked so, good.
You have a Don Juan Jamarco poster in the back.
Yeah.
And it looks like they've kissed it 4,000 times.
Yes, they have. Till they wore the lips off.
I thought that was funny. I did really, really, really enjoy that. And I was wondering, did you want the students to be this terrible to the lunch ladies? Like, nobody likes them.
Yes.
They're miserable.
Yes, because it's like, that's the whole idea. Like, the whole world is against them because it's like, they can't make a good lunch because the school doesn't give them any good food. You know, they're always cutting back on stuff. The kids are demanding, you know, making fun of them because they love Johnny Depp and because the food's always, so yeah, they're the enemy. I mean, if you want to put it in like classic, you know, the good guy, the bad guy, it's like the students are the bad guys. The lunch ladies are the good guys, sort of.
No, I wouldn't even argue they're the good guys. They're just likable villains.
Well, you kind of get, it's like, they're so downtrodden and they're such underdogs that you should be happy that you should be like, you know what they did was wrong, but they kind of, those people kind of had it coming to them. And I kind of, you know, like you can kind of just feel sorry for them and to just maybe if you would snap one day that something like that could happen.
Well, I did think the cheerleader crossed the line with her statements.
She did. She's just like the worst person. She probably bullies everyone too.
Well, I got that impression that she wasn't a very nice person.
In real life, she was wonderful. The girl who played her. She had just turned 16. We were so afraid she wasn't going to get her work permit because she had just turned 16 and was waiting for it. I think we got it like the day before we were to shoot.
So I can ask her a question. You can't work till you're 16?
There's like, oh God, there's just, that was one of the hardest things. There's so many rules about having kids under 16. You have to have, like, if they're under 16, you have to have a teacher on set for a certain amount of time. You can only keep them for a few hours. They all have to have work permits. If you don't have a work permit, I mean, there's, because it was a union shoot, so there's just a lot of rules. And being 15 is much harder than being 16 because you don't have to have a teacher on set when you're 15, but you do when you're, or when you're 16, but you do when you're 15. Which is expensive.
Where did you get your poster from? Don't Be a Robot, No Work, No Soup.
Oh, that was a fantastic idea by the director. Because what happened was originally I called over 100 schools. We could not find a school to shoot this at. It was so hard to find a school. And what we wanted was like the way that I had always imagined it was like a John Hughes type school, you know, like a real privileged school. And Josh's friend worked for a couple Catholic schools. And she's like, why don't you call these Catholic schools? So we called these Catholic schools and amazingly they let us shoot. And it was really cool because the location fees went to the reading program. But when we got to the school, I loved it right away, but it was really jacked looking. It looked, you know, kind of just down and out and not what we'd imagined. And it was huge. Like that kitchen was so huge. And so Josh had to rethink like how we wanted to do it, you know, how we wanted to do it. And he said, you know, I got this idea, like instead of it being like a real privileged school, what if it's more like a Eastern Bloc? Like it has like kind of like a surreal Eastern Bloc flavor to it. And we put up like, you know, there's red trays and the only pop of color is really, you know, the lunch ladies. And it's got like this kind of like these Eastern Bloc posters. And I'm like, I love it. I absolutely love it. And I, you know, it's strange, but the piece is surreal and strange. So I think it fit really, really well with what we were, you know, it was a great way to do it. We couldn't get the expensive, you know, the expensive John Hughes type school. And I think it's actually cooler the way it turned out.
Now I have a question. As a writer, when you see your project like this, you didn't mind people playing with it?
Well, I'll tell you, I was the producer, so I got to have complete creative control. So, Josh did not mess with my script. You know, there was a few things that, you know, that he came up with or changed, but it's like 99% up on the screen. I got to say, I want you as the director. I want my teacher as the producer. I want this, I want that, you know, and I wasn't like a Nazi or anything like that, but I was like, this is what I want. And we all worked really good together. Josh and I were like almost, I mean, I think we disagreed on maybe two things. We were 100% like pretty much almost on the same page with everything, the way we wanted it, the vision, everything. And I'm always open to a better idea. And so is he. there is no ego when it comes to that. It was like, oh, I got this idea. That's a better idea. If it's a better idea, if it's not, I'll fight for it. But like, we really didn't have to fight too much on it. It was, we were just very much on the same page with it. So, and it was a rare thing. I didn't have to give up too much of what I wanted because it was mine.
Did you self-finance this, or was it Indiegogo?
No,
was it
all my money? I didn't want to. I just waited and waited until I would have money to do something. I didn't want to do Indiegogo. I don't want to do any of that because I wanted to have creative control. And I think, not that you can't when you do Indiegogo, it's just you really owe a lot to those people that help you. And I just wanted to, and I was lucky. I have an amazing boss and an amazing job, and I saved my money and I was able to do it. I'm still paying it off, but you know, the majority of it I paid off. So it's worth every penny.
Now you told me Luann's still your friend, right?
Donna's the one that was my friend, the lead.
Donna and Mary. I wrote down their names. Sorry.
Yeah. Mary's the tall, thin one.
Now Mary is the one you had to go find then?
I'll tell you, that's interesting too. It's just, I mean, it was a hard short to make, but it was magical because everything just seemed to come together in such weird ways. So like Josh said, you know, Mary, I know this chick, Mary, and she's great at physical comedy. And I think she fits perfect because I wanted to have two completely different looking women with different energies, but you could see a bond with them. And I said, let's try her. We didn't audition anybody. Like we brought them in. They were perfect.
Hold on. So you didn't audition the cheerleader?
We let her read, but my friend Shayna, who was a producer on it, she's like, she's known her since she was a little girl. She said, I know the girl who'll be perfect for Daisy. And then my friend played the principal, and all the students I found on backstage or were my friends from class. So I just hired the most talented people that I knew.
I thought the students were great. I thought you had a huge cast for what I expected.
You know what's funny is it was a huge cast and crew. It was a cast and crew of over 120.
Okay.
But those students, I had like, I want to say like 25, 30 students, maybe 22, you know, near the end of the day but that auditorium was gigantic and we were freaking the hell out. I was like, what if we don't have enough people? And somehow with all the insanity going on, it made it look like it was just packed, but it really wasn't.
I'll give full kudos to the director. Even in the kitchen, he didn't do any pan shots, I call them, like wide shots. Everything was very tight, I thought.
Yeah.
And no, I thought it worked perfectly for what you were looking at.
Yeah, and that kitchen was huge. Like, it was so big.
But it doesn't look like the way he shot it, because he kept it very narrow. He never gave me any wide.
It was narrow and long. We had amazing set designers who filled it just with so much crap.
Yes, it looked perfect. Sorry. Now again, see, I'm getting lost. You keep just telling crap. I'm like, cool, that's awesome. You know, it's all good.
Talk about the film. What can I say?
It's a great film. I do want to discuss one thing, but I'm going to be nice about it.
Okay.
The bathroom scene. Where did that originate? I love that idea. I thought it was great.
My sick and twisted imagination.
It was great. Beautiful idea.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you appreciate it. It's very lowbrow, but yeah.
No, but it works for the scene. Like, the whole thing works.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I want to discuss the end of the film very briefly when they go do photos.
Uh-huh.
Now, you can't tell me that was Johnny Depp.
I can't talk about any of that. I'm under oath that I can't talk about whether that was Johnny Depp or not.
Okay.
Our mouth is sealed on that one.
Okay.
That is the first question that everybody asks.
I think it's no, because I'm definitely going, doesn't look right, so. Okay, really? That's the first question you get asked, always.
People always want to know, yeah. I'll tell you, I had no idea until I made this how much love there is for Johnny Depp. Like, I knew people liked him, but I had no idea. I mean, it's insane. Like, we have fans on Instagram that are from Qatar, Lebanon. They're crazy about Johnny Depp.
Well,
actually, they're not that much far off from a lot of the fans.
So that's the number one. I love that scene, though, at the end. I thought the photos were such a good idea.
We wanted to wrap it up because we were like, yeah, you know, everybody's going to want to see if they actually get to do it. And it ends on an upbeat note, too, and you get to hear some rock and roll, which is...
Yeah, it was great. So, what are your plans? How long did it take to shoot?
Well, we did it over 2 weekends. when we needed like 100 days to do it, but we did it over 2 weekends. But we took a long time prepping it. Like, I wrote the feature first, so that took 15 months, and then I put that aside, and then came back later. I was like, I'm going to write a short, and that took another 5 months with really working it, so the script just squeaked. Then I had to find the director. Then he and I prepped for, I want to say, 6 or 7 months. So there was a lot of preparation because, you know, we didn't have that much money to, I didn't have that much money to shoot forever, and we only had 2 weekends, and we wanted to make sure everything was right. No. But from start to finish, it was about a year. By the time I was done editing, maybe a year and 2 months, 3 months, something like that.
Now, as a writer, do you find it's easier to write at home, or do you find it's easier to go to the cafeteria, like at a mall or something?
I'm like, no sounds. Like, I have to even wear earplugs. I can't stand any sounds. It's hard for me to concentrate.
So earplugs? Like nothing? So no phone distracting,
like
no TV?
When I'm writing.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's a detriment. I have friends who can write with music. I don't understand it, but...
Yeah, because that's the way I would write. I would write with music.
With music? Oh, I can't. I can't concentrate. I don't know. It's weird.
That's so weird. Okay, that's awesome. I also want to discuss, so you said originally you were an actor.
Yes.
And you're in one of my favorite films, Hoodwink series. I wish there was a third one, but there's not. So tell me some Hoodwink stories, because I couldn't really give you any, because I haven't seen it in such a long time.
I started as an actress, and I always wanted to get in a voiceover, and I was in a short film that this friend did, and there was a director in it that saw me, and he said, I want you to come and do... He thought I was really good because I used to do a lot of character work, and he said, I want you to come and do scratch. I didn't know what scratch meant at the time, but scratch means like you go and do the dialogue so people can start doing the rendering of everything. Like, they're not going to have Meryl Streep, if she's playing the lead, whatever, come and do it. They're going to have a person like me. So basically you do it for free. Like, I went into this jacked house in the middle of the desert, practically, you know, like I'm in Northridge, you know, to lay these tracks down. And, anyway, what happened was they loved it and they cast me. And I actually had a bigger part that went to somebody who was bigger, but that's okay. I still got to be in it. And, so that's how I ended up doing it. It was just kind of a luck kind of thing, because getting into a voiceover movie is very, very difficult. So you don't really get auditions for them, and they usually go to stars. So I was lucky to get like a small part in it. So it's cool.
And then you gave that up to be a writer.
I was always a writer. I just didn't know it. Like, I was like a hardcore actress. Like, I went to school and everything, but my favorite thing to do was sketch comedy. And I would write all these characters, all these really, really crazy characters. And I would do them, and I was good at it. But I didn't really realize that what I loved the most was writing the characters. And then I discovered Twin Bridges writing class about 13 years ago. And then I was like, holy shit, I love writing so much. And I had like, it was almost like a nervous breakdown. I was like, oh my God, I've been an actress my whole life. What am I going to, I'm giving up. And then my friend was like, it's like a tributary in a river. You're just taking a detour. Don't worry. You can always come back.
That's true.
But I never looked back. Okay. Not that I wouldn't do voiceover again or something like that, but I just love writing. I just love it. So that's what I want to do.
But it's got to be quiet, though. I don't get
it. I love it. It's like the best escape in the world. Like, I can escape. It's just, you know, like how people can escape by just, like, watching a movie, or they can escape by going shopping. I can escape by writing.
Well, that's great.
And you're completely in the moment.
How's your film done on the circuit?
It's doing freaking great. Like, I'm so happy, and so, I mean, I was really proud of it and happy when it was done, because it was exactly what I wanted, and we all were like, oh my gosh, we did the best we could do, and this is really authentic, and it's original, but we didn't know how people would take it, you know, and it's been an amazing ride, and it's just starting, so, I mean, we're just kind of really getting into our film festival now, and we went to Clermont-Ferrand in France, which was like the most amazing experience, and trying to get to as many countries as possible. And we're going to be in, you know, Nevermore. I mean, there's just Nevermore Film Fest this week, and Exploitation in Canada. I don't know if you ever go to that. That's in Hamilton, Ontario.
That's actually, you're going to Hamilton?
Yeah, we're going to be there soon. I want to say March.
You know what? I'll make you an effort. I'll meet you there.
I can't go.
Oh, if you're not going, then I'm not going to show up. Hamilton's about an hour from me, so.
Really? Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it used to be called, I want to say, Fright Fest or something. They renamed it Hexploitation.
Okay, I know it. Fright. Okay, good. Yes.
Yeah, they renamed it Hexploitation, so we're in that. That's our Canadian premiere with the movie Bloodsucker Jones, which I haven't seen yet, but we're playing with that.
I have not seen it either, so which is weird. They'll probably send it to me at some point.
Yeah, and then I just keep trying to, like, get as much promotion as possible for the film. I'm, like, relentless with it because I want to build a following to show someone, hey, come make the feature, you know?
That's so – okay, I want to go back. That was my last follow-up was the feature. Okay. Now, do you plan to expand this into a feature then?
It's already written. I did that first.
So that's what I thought. Then you reduce it to a short is what I'm understanding.
This is what I wanted to make. It's a proof of concept because there's some weird thing in the industry where people are like, oh, nobody, you know, horror comedies are really hard to sell. And people are like, oh, no, there's no audience for them. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe if I, you know, because I was like, oh, I was going to make an indie, like, sweet film. I have some sweet films. And then I'm like, I want to make a proof of concept of this. To show people that there's an audience, and there is an audience. There's plenty of horror comedy fans out there that would go see it. So that's what I'm trying to prove with the short.
This may be a weird question for you, but wouldn't you like to see a Netflix or an Amazon to pick up these films and just put a collection of them for like 2 hours, watch all these shorts?
That's actually not a weird question because there's actually a company that came to me that wants to do exactly that. With the film. And I think it's a great idea, just like Halloween Tales, but I'm not ready to like sell it or give it up yet because I want to go to the film fest route and I want to see what comes of it. But I'm going to contact them again next year. I think it's a great idea because I love seeing like 5 really good shorts together for like Halloween or Valentine's Day or whatever. So there is a company that's starting to do that.
Perfect. Good. That's good to hear. Are you ready for fun questions?
I'm ready.
Because I know you've listened to other interviews. I could mix them up and give you new ones, but I won't do that. Yeah, I'll give you one special one. Favorite place to eat?
My favorite place to eat? Do I have a favorite? Well, I mean, I always go to this place called The Federal. That's probably my favorite place to eat. But I just like Mexican food, man. I mean, like, if you get any place that makes good Mexican food, I'm there.
And is In-N-Out Burger worth me going to?
Yes. I haven't been in years because I cut that out, but In-N-Out is freaking awesome.
Okay.
It is awesome.
Now it's time for your fun questions. Those are just random questions I throw in just to confuse you. Favorite film?
What's that?
Your favorite film?
Oh, my God. That's impossible. I mean, I love... A Girl Walks Home Alone. I love.
I've not seen that yet. I keep meaning to watch it.
Oh God, I love it. Anything Chaplin. Anything.
Hold on. Gold Rush. Which one are we going with?
I love all of them. Probably Great Dictator.
Overcast.
Love Donnie Darko. The Exorcist. Let the Right One In.
Let's back this up. Have you seen Safety Last? Harold Lloyd.
No.
Okay. I love Charlie Chaplin.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely seen everything but Gold Rush, and Gold Rush is sitting upstairs for me to watch this weekend.
Great.
Then I'll be caught up. I still like Safety Last. It's still my favorite.
Wait, I have seen it because I've seen all of this. I don't remember it.
That's the one when he climbs the building and he's on the clock tower and the clock tower goes around.
Yeah.
That is my favorite. Nothing can beat that for me. I've even seen everything by Chaplin, except for Gold Rush, which will be done this weekend.
Gold Rush is hysterical.
And just think. So, okay, they've got a lot of Exorcist is a phenomenal film. Donnie Darko, I really like.
Anything, I love John Hughes, you know. I love artsy-fartsy movies. I love Swedish movies, you know, like Scandinavian movies are some of the best movies in the world. I freaking love Scandinavian movies. I love, what's the movie with Stanley Kubrick's the long one, the really long one about the guy Ryan O'Neill?
I haven't seen it.
Oh God, I can't even think of what it's one of my favorite movies of his, and
it'll come back to you, I promise.
Donnie Darko, did I say Donnie Darko?
Yes, you did. Everybody, I love Donnie Darko.
Yeah, I mean. A Man and a Woman. I like French film.
Oh, look at you. You are like a movie. You're as bad as me.
Well, you know what? That was one of the first things my mentor did for me is because I was an actress. I had done theater. So he gave me a list of what he called watershed films, which weren't the best films that he said, but this films that had changed movies. And it's a list of like 500 films. And he's like, here's your education. And I think after 10 years have finished it. I've gone through every single film on that list.
Was St. Joan on that list from 1927?
I don't think St. Joan is on the list because it was a watershed list. So for example, like Help, the Beatles movie was on there because of the way they did the editing. When they did that, then everybody else started doing editing like that. So it's kind of an interesting list. He has another list of what he considers like the best, but there are some of the best movies on there. But movies like Seconds are on there. I don't know if you ever saw Seconds. Did you see Seconds?
I've not seen Seconds.
Jack Hudson? Oh, God.
Was Sunrise, Son of Two Humans on there? Sunrise, Song of Two Humans, 1926, I think.
No.
Oh, see, these are weird silent films I'm asking you about.
Yeah, no, I think I'll have to send it to you because it is really interesting and it's given me a whole new appreciation for film because I used to be like, oh, I don't like silent films. Then now I freaking love silent films.
So do I.
Because you don't have to, they're so relaxing.
Yeah, they are. You just enjoy them.
Check the screen off, yeah.
Okay, it's Friday night. I'll presume your girlfriends or boyfriends are over, whatever you would like. What are you going to put on for them?
Oh, well, actually, tonight I'm going to get a massage. An hour and a half massage. Because I've been going all over the country, and I'm like, fuck yeah, I want to relax.
No movie, just massage. Okay, all good.
Suspiria. Have you seen it?
Oh, the Argento film. No, I haven't yet. I will.
It's okay. It's fucking great, but like, there's parts of it where the script is just reprehensible. But it is so visually unusual; it's like nothing I've ever seen, and it's scary.
Well, they remade it for this year, so I have to watch the original. Then I watch the remake.
I can't even imagine how they would remake that film. When you see the original, it'd be like, how are they going to remake it?
I don't know. But supposedly they did, so I'm going to have to watch. But I always watch both, so I will watch the original and the thing. That's how I saw The Room, because it's Disaster Artist. I finally sat down and watched The Room.
Oh, I love both of those.
Because everybody was bugging me. You've never seen The Room? I said, I don't know. I just read so much.
The Room is the best worst way. It's the best in the worst way.
It is. Okay, the easiest question, concession stand question, what do you buy?
What do I buy?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean, like buy with money?
Yes, at the concession stand, or you can smuggle in your own food.
Oh, concession stand, always popcorn. I'm big on popcorn. Yeah, I don't care about the rest of it. I'm like all about popcorn, popcorn, popcorn. And I don't like to share, so.
Ah, see, another non-sharer. There we go.
I like to share things, but not my popcorn in the movie theater. I'm kind of like,
You and my daughter would get along great. I just hand it to her. It's okay, I'm good.
I love it.
Well, thank you for sending me your film.
Thank you for the awesome interview and letting me, like, you know, promo my film, because the lunch ladies are whores for getting, you know, promotion. They just want to be promoted all the time.
They're so good, though. It needs to be out there. People need to see this film. They got to find it. I guess they'll have to go to the film festival circuit for now.
Yeah, or just, you know, follow my social media, drop me an email. I'm very, like, I respond to everybody, tell you where it's going. I'll, you know, hopefully be able to hook you up so you can see it, and I want people to be able to see it, man, you know?
And then we get the feature when this thing takes off.
We want the feature made because there's a lot more murders that happen.
I'm sure there is. I'm hoping there is. I can't wait to see it. So thank you again for your time, and you have a great night.